Hello and welcome to In Stitches, the upholstery podcast for upholsterers, telling your story and inspiring others with me, your host, Robbie Richardson. And today my guest is Susie Stanway. Susie, welcome.
Hi, Robbie.
Hi. So, usual way we start, which I say every time, and I must stop doing that, but there you go. It is the usual way we start. When you left school, did you know what you wanted to do? Was upholstery featured in the world or not?
No, definitely not. I always knew that I wanted to do something creative, but to be honest, at age 16 or age 18 when I left school, I had no idea what. And we moved around quite a lot when we were kids. My dad was a single parent and he worked as an accountant and he ran big printing factories. And I think the priority was on us getting like proper steady jobs, and that kind of space to explore creativity just wasn't really an option for us. Yeah. So no, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I just went straight into what I wanted to do. And I just kind of went straight down that path of A-levels and university and a job.
And so you did A-levels, university and a job. What was your job? What was your first job? What were you working as?
So I always worked in marketing and events, and because I did really enjoy that whole world of creativity and style, I worked in mostly in fashion and kind of lifestyle marketing. And I worked for all sorts of different companies and different brands, but I guess the two last ones were the most notable. I worked for Philip Green, who was the kind of, you know, the typical tycoon who owned Topshop and Topman and all those brands. And then after I finished working for Philip, I worked for the Woolmark company, which is, you know, when you buy a jumper and it's got that little swirly symbol in it.
Yeah.
I worked for them and I promoted.
Okay. So was this a job that you really enjoyed? Did it become something that was a passion, or was it just a job?
No, I loved it actually. And I would say that, like, that kind of industry, it's quite hard when you're first starting out and you will do a lot of really boring jobs and things that you don't want to do. But as you get a little bit more autonomy, you start to be able to do things that are way more interesting. And I think once I got to that point where I was kind of heading up quite big events and marketing campaigns, I really loved it. And I used to do loads of things like big collection launches, press trips, photo shoots. I used to organise loads of parties, all sorts of things. And then with Walmart, I got to travel the world, which was amazing. So I would work with teams in Asia on delivering their seasonal campaigns. And throughout Europe, I used to go to Paris a lot. I used to go to Milan a lot. It was really, really fun. And we used to do all sorts of crazy stunts as well. So there was a year with the project I worked on at Walmart, which was called the Campaign for Wool, where we turfed over Savile Row and we had a flock of sheep grazing on it, and we had all these models dressed in the most amazing tailored suits.
Fantastic.
You know, to promote the craft of tailoring. We did all sorts of fun things. The Prince of Wales was the patron of the Campaign for Wool, and it was like a campaign that was funded by all the different wool growing nations in the world. So there was British Wool and the Australians of Walmart. And we used to do things like bury a jumper in the Prince of Wales's back garden. We've set fire to a load of carpet in his garden. Loads of fun things. So I loved it. And I used to work with some really talented people. And yeah, it was great.
And I guess it was a very creative job as well, in terms of trying to get a sales point across and create a campaign.
Yeah, definitely. I would say a lot of creative problem solving. And I used to, with both of those jobs, I used to work with a lot of people that would tell me that they needed a floating concrete shelf building by 4 o'clock or some fluorescent lighting putting up, but with no lead. And so, or skyhooks and, you know, striped paint, all those usual things. Yeah. And so it was really fun to kind of work with those very creative and interesting people who would see no obstacle at all to making these demands.
Yeah, it must have been a lot of fun, particularly when there's you're not having to worry about the budget as well, I guess.
Oh, yeah, especially with Philip Green. He used to work with enormous budgets. It was
Fun. I can imagine. It must have been a bit daunting, I would imagine. But anyway, so what sparked the change? What took you down the route of upholstery?
Well, I think when I worked at Walmart in particular, I used to meet all of these amazingly talented people. So like whether they were rug weavers or textile and furniture designers or fashion designers, interior stylists, all of these people, that if they made something beautiful from wool, I would know them for sure. And it was so inspiring. And I really started to think that I wanted to explore that side of my own creativity, promote other people's work. I suppose I was always that person that used to kind of manage the process of creativity. And I really felt like I wanted to try and express myself creatively rather than.
So what sparked your career change? What moved you on?
Well, I think when I was at Walmart was when I really started to think about it. I used to meet all of these amazing, talented makers and artists and, you know, textile designers, interior stylists, Savile Row tailors, rug weavers, you name it. If they made something beautiful and interesting with wool, I used to know them. And I think that was really inspiring. And that's when I started to think that I wanted to explore my own creativity rather than promoting the work of other people. And I guess we, at the same time, we also moved out of London and it was too far for both of us to commute into town every day. And I think I just decided that it was time to take a little bit of time out and to think about other things I could do. And I guess like when you're both of you have got these kind of really full on stressy deadline driven jobs, it's really hard to manage that when you've got a young family. So I think the two things came together at the same time, really. It was that desire to do something that was more practically creative for myself, but also to do something that kept me busy without the insane stress levels.
No, I can see that. So how did you first start in the craft? How did you get rolling? What was the first steps into it?
Well, when you're on long car journeys and you have those random chit-chats about what you do if you won the lottery or, you know, you didn't have to work anymore. And I always used to say that I wanted to learn how to bring old chairs back to life. And my husband was always like, okay, that's a bit random, but, you know, if that's what you had this, I don't know why. It always appealed to me. And I've always loved furniture and interiors. And, that whole world is something that I really love. But it was particularly upholstery and I didn't know anything about it. But then when we moved out of London, I decided that it was the time I was going to learn. So I found Greg's weekend course that he used to run at the Woburn Craft School. And I would say the minute that I started, I just knew that I was going to absolutely love it. It was that workshop is so small, but so jam-packed full of amazing tools. And there's all these people in there tinkering away with furniture. And I just felt like, you know, I had found my people, basically.
Yeah. So do you remember what you started on?
Yes. The first thing that I upholstered was a Victorian ironback, which I bought for £30 from an antique shop in Berkhamsted. And I had absolutely no idea how hard it would be to upholster. I just went for it. I didn't do a very good job on it. And it took me ages.
In at the deep end, that is.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But then also that's that whole thing of, you know, not knowing what you don't know, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So you did that as a leisure course. And then sort of how did you move on from that? What made you decide that you wanted to take this further? Was it just that whole thing of wanting to renovate chairs? Was that the drive? Or was it actually that you really connected with it when you did it?
I really connected with it when I did it. I always knew, and I can't tell you why it appealed to me so much, but I always, for years, I wanted to learn how to do it. I guess working in the kind of the events industry that I did, it's not particularly girly. And I liked the idea of doing something that was quite physically hard and not kind of fussy. Do you know what I mean? It's like upholstery is quite hard work and you have to use different tools. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know how to explain it to you, but I connected with it instantly. And the minute I got there, I just knew that it was something I wanted to explore more.
So what were the next steps after that leisure course then and finishing the Ironback?
There was no way that I was going to finish the Ironback in Greg's leisure class because it only lasted for 6 weeks.
So that's a common mistake, that is. That's such a common mistake. Yeah. Yeah.
I should have taken a dining chair, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So then I signed up to do Wendy Shorter's Friday leisure class. And that's when I finished the Ironback. And by the time I'd finished doing the Ironback, I knew that I wanted to continue doing it. And I wanted to learn how to do it properly rather than just do it as a hobby. And I felt really passionate about it. And yeah, so I decided that it was a good idea to start the AMU course.
Yeah. Do you feel like your previous skills, which were obviously very different, have helped you with upholstery in any way, or is it just completely different?
Well, sort of. I think the most helpful thing that I can take from my previous before chairs life is that I was used to working for some really demanding people on some quite high profile projects, and so I'm very used to working outside of my comfort zone, and I think I took a lot from that. And you know, it would be lots of last minute problem solving, being quite resourceful. Generally, I had to be quite ballsy in my job, and I think that that has given me quite a lot of confidence, because it's a really hard thing to change career. And to, you can go and learn how to do something else, but then to actually put your hand up and say, this is what I want to be now, and this is what I want to do, that's actually really hard, particularly when you see so many people in the industry that have been doing it for decades. And, you know, they're so established and they're so brilliant. And then you're going, oh, yeah, I want to do it too. That, I think that requires quite a lot of confidence. So I think that's probably the thing that I've taken from my old job.
Yeah. And sort of in terms of your education, because you've mentioned Wendy, where else have you been learning? I'm assuming.
I've been with the... Yeah, so the School of Upholstered Furniture with Gareth and Greg for the last 3 years. When they opened up their school, I just signed up to do the first stages of the AMU course with Wendy. And that was great, but I was really keen. I just loved meeting Greg so much. And so when they opened the school, I knew straight away that I would want to carry on my training, the last stage of the AMU course with them, level 3. And then I stayed on, and I've just finished the advanced traditional diploma that Gareth teaches.
And so how have you found that? Tell us a little bit about the advanced diploma and actually the steps up to that, sort of like the, you know, from stage one right the way through. Talk a little bit about the education and how you found it.
Well, I would say that something that I feel really strongly about Gareth and Greg and the school that they've started there, I just think that they are such amazing advocates for the craft, and they're really generous with their knowledge, and they teach way beyond the syllabus. And I think that has really helped me, because I feel really passionate about it. But to be totally honest, I wasn't very good when I first started, and I'm probably still not very good, but I really want to learn. And I think No, it's true. And I think they see that in me and other students that they have. So they, you know, they're really generous with their skills and their knowledge, and they teach you as much as you want to learn.
And I guess also, this isn't just about Gareth and Greg, even though it seems to be at the moment, but all of those schools are giving you confidence and an understanding and a knowledge in nice steps, aren't they? So you're not
Definitely.
There's a structure to it that makes sense.
Yeah, the structure really makes sense for sure.
And so in terms of moving on to the advanced diploma, talk us through a little bit about what you've been doing there and how you found that.
Well, the brief is that you are to design and to create, to upholster your own piece of furniture. And what makes it unique, I suppose, is that because you're designing something from scratch, there are no constraints as to how something has to be upholstered. So there's a lot of freedom there, which makes it quite fun. It can also make it quite daunting as well. So I would say that it's an absolutely brilliant course, and I've learned far more than the techniques that were involved in the making of my chair.
Yeah. And I guess also as part of the AMUSF course is that you are actually also gaining an understanding of the history and the textiles of our trade as well, which is invaluable, I think, within that.
Yeah, definitely. It's not just about the practical hands-on experience. You learn a lot about the history of furniture, and so therefore what's appropriate for a certain piece, you know, and what, conversely, what isn't appropriate as well. Context is everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think it's such an exciting way of learning in a way that I never did. And it's, I wish that had been around when I was starting out, because it would have been fabulous. But anyway, it wasn't. It's not about me. So what has surprised you about the craft? What have you found the challenge or exciting about it?
Well, I was thinking about this. I don't think that anything is exactly surprised me about the craft itself, but I've been really surprised by how much I have grown to love it and how dedicated I've become to it. And, you know, I started out with absolutely zero experience and no expectation of how far I'd get, and I just knew that I wanted to try it, and I've been learning for 5 years now, and I feel like, even though there's so much to learn and a lot to get much better at, I feel like I've come a long way with it, which is a really nice surprise. I've just finished, as you've said, I've just finished the advanced traditional diploma. And I've just submitted yesterday, in fact, my journeyman application to join the Guild of Traditional Upholsterers. So
that's exciting.
It's really exciting. Yeah. I feel like this is my life now. You know, I kind of started out wanting to change career and do something more practical and more creative, and I've done it. So it's great.
And what are your aspirations? What are you hoping to achieve from this?
I was going to say, first and foremost, I'd just like to get better.
Yeah. Is that it?
No.
We all want to get better. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. Yeah.
Well, I think that's my main thing, is I'd really like just to get better. And I feel like when I finished going back to talking about doing the AMU course and then doing the advanced diploma, I would say that the AMU course is brilliant for covering the basics, and, you know, you get to that point where you've finished, what, 2 pieces in your first year, 2 pieces in your second year, and then so 6 pieces in total. But I felt like that wasn't really enough to me, the confidence to go out and kind of work commercially.
What are your aspirations?
To get better at upholstery, I think. So when I finished my AMU training, I just felt like I was nowhere near ready or good enough to kind of work professionally, I suppose. So doing the advanced diploma has been a brilliant way to continue learning, but I can't be a student forever. So I would say that on a practical level, I'd like to get to a place where, you know, I'm quicker and more competent. And I think in order to do that, I probably need to get some more workshop experience.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And I think that my other aspiration is that doing the advanced diploma for the last year and a half has made me feel more confident in my own creative ability. And I made several pieces for my final diploma, and I would like to explore bringing those to life in a commercial manner. So, more workshop experience.
Just a matter of interest, what are your thoughts on getting workshop experience? How are you looking to get that? Have you put any thought into it?
Well, yeah, and I have just done a week's work experience with Armand, who was really kind in having me in his space for a week, which was brilliant, and I learned a lot from him. But I can tell that I need to do a lot more, because you only know what you know, and if I'm just working by myself in isolation and I'm not going to school once a week, then I don't really have that opportunity to learn from people who are experienced in the craft.
Yeah, no, totally. that's where a mentor is so important, I think, within this whole sort of program, really. I know that's what the Guild are working on, but it, just individually, that's what you need, because otherwise you can get very lost in it.
So yeah, definitely.
We always sort of ask the question, what advice would you give? And I kind of quite like to turn the question round and ask you what advice you think would be useful as a student coming through the system. What do you think would be really useful for you or anyone else come to that matter?
Well, I think that I've been extremely lucky meeting Gareth and Greg because they are so supportive of their students. And they just want to see the craft flourish. And I think that they've been really supportive with me. And I know that I can go to them with any random question. You know, as long as it's upholstery related, I can ask them anything and they will help me. So I sort of feel like I've been very lucky to meet those two. And that in a way, they're not my formal mentors in any way, shape or form. But I do feel I've got that kind of relationship with them, particularly with Gareth now. So I can't think of anything that I particularly need that kind of support with, but I would say that having that open access to work experience would be great. And, you know, I hope that by joining the Guild as a journeyman member, that I will be given, you know, that opportunity to get more work experience. And yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that totally. Cause it's that, I mean, I seem to say this every single podcast, but that is the missing link with it within the AMUSF courses, I think. And that's in no way criticizing the AMUSF because they're brilliant, but it's just there is no forward step. But I've banged on about that enough. So who inspires you within the trade? Who has been sort of like, I mean, other than Gareth and Greg, because I get that it's Gareth and Greg, but I mean, in terms of people you follow and stuff like that. I mean, Gareth and Greg have had more than enough mentions for one day.
No, I won't speak of them again. I think those people, you know, the people whose work I see, and I'm always just floored by their immaculate finish and just the beauty of what they produce. So I would say, you know, it's where you see like every single layer of the chair that they have completed for somebody beautifully. So people like Daryl Tozer, I just think his work is lovely. Obviously, Armand, he's the master. His work is immaculate. And I know because I've seen it now in the flesh, which is a really fortunate position to be in, that it really is that beautiful in real life.
It's not really foam then?
No! Other person who I really, really admire her work is Nicola Anstey, who did, you know, she's not a particularly experienced upholsterer. She's done the AMU course along with the rest of us, but she has just got the most amazing natural talent for it. So I often look at Nicola's work when I need to see how something should be done.
Yeah. No, that's lovely. That's really nice because it proves that it's not just about the experience. It's about the understanding and the flair, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I would say as well, the other thing that the AMU gives you is that network of people that you can go to. And I would never have met Nicola without that. So yes. I think that's been really important. And there are some other people, you know, people like Delith, who I did the course with, and Amanda on the advanced diploma, people who they may not have the exact answer straight away, but they will be able to support you through a tricky situation in a chair. Sometimes they do know the exact answer as well.
So what part of the skill do you most want to master? Is there something that you just look at and think, I could be better at this?
Yeah, definitely. I need to be a lot neater. Like, I have nice ideas, but I don't think that I've got that natural hand that executes things so beautifully. So yeah. I would say working on a really neat and tidy finish to my work is probably what I need to improve on.
I guess that if you're in the right place, that will actually come by gaining some experience in the right workshop.
Yeah, I would hope so.
So we come to the last question. Mm-hmm. So desert island, a book, a film,
yes,
and some music.
Okay. Right. Book. I would say Anything by David Sedaris, who's okay. This. Oh, yeah, my God.
Funny.
Everything that man says makes me cry laughing. And he is just hilarious. But I would say my favourite book by him is Me Talk Pretty One Day, which is quite hard to say. Me Talk Pretty One Day. And it's about him living in France. It is genius. And then film, well, I normally fall asleep halfway through most movies, but I would say Captain Fantastic, which is about this man who's got a bunch of genius kids and they all live off grid in the wilderness in a forest in like Seattle somewhere. And the film is about their journey back into civilization. It's really funny. And Viggo Mortensen is the dad in it. It's brilliant. And then music, I would say I'm going to cheat because I can't think of a song. But there's a playlist that I listen to all the time on Spotify that's 72 hours long. And it's by this DJ called Chris Coco. And it's like a real mix of kind of 70s yacht rock mixed with some of the house classics. And there's kind of Ibiza sunset tunes. And that saw me all the way through upholstering my first sofa in lockdown last summer. And I listened to it obsessively, so I'm going to say that.
I do think that's cheating. And really, I should pull you up on it, because, but I'm not going to. Susie, thank you. That's really interesting. And really, really good to talk to you. So thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed the podcast, please share. If you didn't, then don't bother, obviously. But thanks for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.